this is a top to a, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board.
Oh.
11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11,
and amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, everybody, welcome aboard Foxed Up here for a Thursday night or Friday afternoon, depending on where you are on this beautiful blue marble, such as it is. And it's a massive day here on Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. And I want to welcome all the new chatters and listeners that have come tonight via MySpace. It's great to have you with us. I know you all are really excited for today's guest, so I think we should waste no time in getting him on. So I would like to introduce, it is my great pleasure and honor, the maestro, the one, the only, Mr. Travis Meeks. Travis, welcome to the program, my friend.
Mucho. Hello.
Hey, how are you, man?
I'm good. I'm actually sitting here looking at a photo shoot that I did that is actually... It's wonderful. It is a wonderful photo shoot. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great, man, and I've been bombarded by messages from friends of yours on MySpace today. I think I spent about 5 hours replying to messages for people that were, just looking forward to this interview, because I think this is a rare opportunity for fans of what you do to actually get to hear a conversation with you about where you've been, what you're doing, what's going to be happening with Purple and everything else. So I've been looking forward to this. You and I have had some great conversations over the last week. And like you said the other day, let's just stop here and continue this energy on air, which I think was just a tremendous concept. So
okay.
Go ahead, mate.
I just got to get my head out of these pictures. I'm so... taken their beauty. Oh, the narcissism. No, actually, a lot of it is atmosphere as well. The way I did my photo session was I build scenes, something I love to do. Much like, I guess the best way to describe it is, you know, like Hollywood sets? You know how they build for studios and stuff?
Yes, I do.
I mean, I like to decorate different themes and do it in my way and to try to create an energy. And I've always done that to write my music. That's how I've always operated. I'm really putting a lot of energy in the artwork, photos, and the image on this record and the music, all of the above, because just so we can just... clarify that. In the past, I had people trying to run things for me and thought they knew what was best for me, But when you're with most bands, that works. But when you're dealing with someone who has the passion and desire, and it's just in their bones to handle all their affairs and has the full vision, it becomes a little complicated. And then information and gets turned into so many different things, and so there's been like a stigma involved with the name, the brand name Days of the New. And today I would like to clear some of that up. Also, what I would like to do is let you know where I've been, where I am, and where I'm going. And anything else we want to talk about that involving my recovery, which it means the non-uses of alcohol and drugs, and my take on it, and anything you want to talk about. I'm an open book. I have nothing to hide. It's one beautiful thing about it.
It's one of the things that struck me with the chats that you and I have had over the last week, and you know, things like recovery and addiction are something that we talk about a lot on this network. One of our hosts, Peter Godbold, had was on the wrong end of a crack pipe for 15 years. And we believe in sharing these stories and these tales with people are only going to do good for people when you remove some of the stigma about addiction and get dealing with the issues that maybe caused the addiction or brought it on, and how you get through and recover from addiction. Because addiction is an awful thing. I mean, I've been working in the music industry for years. I've probably dealt with virtually every addiction you can name with different artists, and it's
I'm one of the few. Last I heard is 7% of crystal methamphetamines. Crystal methamphetamine addicts get clean. Now, 7% of that 7% get clean. So, what is that? Like 3.5? I don't know.
It's minuscule.
Statistics of people getting clean. I tell you this, man. That drug used properly. Now, I'm not glorifying it or. Highly recommending people to do it, nor am I telling them not to do it. But for me, the experiences that I needed to have, quote, hear me now, the experiences that I needed to have mentally, spiritually, visually, that drug was my drug. Acid, mescaline, ecstasy, marijuana, any other drugs that could have offered me, an alternate state of being, even alcohol, alcohol just kind of, was a, just kind of numbed the moment just so you could act like a fool. And in this industry, everybody's expecting you to act like a fool in some kind of charismatic way. I'm a very intellectual individual. I would like to, if you don't mind, first off, I'd like to just hear a little bit about where you want to go with this, and then I would like to share with you where I would like to go with this.
I would like to get into some music before too long, but I kind of think if we talk about the addiction thing and get it out of the way, it frees us up a little bit, because I know it's probably not the greatest subject in the world. However, you're talking to a group of people that do not have a stigma oriented view on these issues. And you mentioned the fact that these were, ways to alter consciousness that actually worked for some sort of benefit at a time, and I can see that. But there was definitely a point where it ended up affecting other parts of your life in a negative fashion, and also your health.
Now may I, excuse me if I'm interrupting, but may I translate what I'm hearing you say? Now, what I heard you say was, what you said verbatim. Mm-hmm. But what I'm getting out of what you're saying is that you know. You know, the use of substances and taking that path it shares the same similarities as trying to be a Buddhist or some kind of guru. I mean, you can go too far. You can definitely go too far no matter what you do. I don't care what it is. I mean, you can be a bodybuilder and over bodybuild and like pull your muscle out for good and like totally screw yourself. You can actually drink too much water and get over hydrated. You can overdo anything. And as Americans, that's what we know what to do. I know you're not of that. I don't know if that's if you get to experience the same thing, although the world is highly influenced by American culture. My opinion is only because, you know, we're the ones whining that we need justice and freedom, which we already have justice and freedom. There's just always going to be that guy who thinks he knows it all and who's trying to organize things. But that's how, you know, the universe works. I mean, you know, it's like you watch all these futuristic movies about, you know, the end of the world and, or, you know, organized, you know, religion like Equilibrium or, you know, even The Matrix was based around that, trying to organize a way of thinking or a consciousness to keep things under control. And the thing is feeling is a very complex thing. And what I've learned is that some people, in order for human beings to feel, certain human beings have to be sacrificed because of their inability to control themselves. And that's a sad thing. You know, it is a sad thing. But, I mean, I will top that off. And I'm a very deep feeler, and I'm a very deep thinker. And I experience a duality and a struggle between those two worlds. I'm sure that's not taboo to anybody who's listening to me right now, nor are you.
Not at all.
But the difference is that, you know, I'm very aware of it, and I focus on it. I write about it in my lyrics and music, and I express it every day. And what I get off on is honesty. And if, go ahead. You have anything you want to say?
Well, I'll just kind of springboard off of that. You know, you mentioned that you you get into this in the music, and isn't writing about your own issues very cathartic and healing? And not only that, help to reinforce the changes that you have made or are trying to make or trying to maintain.
Oh, you have no idea. I mean, I started when I was 11 years old getting really serious. And my mind frame was, I had it. I knew what I was doing. This is what I was doing. I had it. I owned it. But the skills and techniques and frame of mind that I was in, the different ways of thinking, only served me so far and so much. Now, I can relate that, and I can project my own judgment of thyself unto the world, and I can see the same behavior in the music industry, in the entertainment industry, and in the world itself. And how I can top that off is everybody's on a journey, and I practice every day not judging anyone. As much as resentment is trying to own space in my brain, I practice thoroughly trying to keep my brain open for the things that are important and prioritize, because fear and negative energy, let me back up. Fear is always trying to own me. It is always trying to own me, and let me define that. My ego is trying to tell me who I am. My ego is trying to tell me who I think I am, and my ego is trying to tell me who you think I am. And that's a lot of expectations. You end up carrying the weight of the world, you know, and these are things that, to a small degree, now, if I was to say negativity has a purpose, like, okay, we have positive and negativity, in this world today, you know, a lot of people are brought up that it's positive or nothing. You know, it's all or nothing. And then that leads to pride. And that leads to a lot of sexual issues, a lot of deep-seated issues that cause us to have to label each other as bipolar, ADD. I've been diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, which is a mild autism, which also, I don't know where I'm at, and I don't know where we have arrived in this conversation, but I would like to, if you would allow me, just kind of start from the beginning and give just like a brief, quick story from 95 all the way up to now, if you wouldn't mind.
Please do, mate. The floor is yours.
Okay. All right. Well, I would like to say that I may sound a little silly. I do suffer from narcissism and high obsession on my work. I do try to practice taking time, socializing and practicing compassion and being of service to other people. It's very healing, getting out of myself. Let's see here.
He's come prepared. He's got notes, folks.
Yeah. I went ahead and had to go out with it because, you know, I mean, I'm manic and I'll just talk and talk and talk, and then 3 hours will go by and we only got an hour. So let's fit this in an hour and play some songs and just go around the world with this energy we got going here. And by the way, thoroughly enjoy your energy and talking to you. Okay, there's how I want the world to see me, and then there's how I am. And they share similarities. And when I let go of my ego, I just seem to be who I am. And my passions seem to weigh, and I'm going to label myself. That's because it's a language that seems to be dominant in society and consciousness today. There's nothing wrong with labeling, and we need to judge and la 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 la. And if you ask me, there's nothing wrong with wrong, but the idea of wrong itself, you know. Only I can kick my ass, you know. But that's a deeper story. That's a whole nother deeper story. I am a folk artist. That's what I am. I am a folk world classical composer. It's in my blood. My grandfather was a conductor and a composer. He worked in the military. My father, by the way, my grandfather on my mother's side, by the way. Now, my father was a singer and a songwriter and a very, very charismatic front man who dressed like, kind of like, who wore white outfits, like white Vegas outfits with like, you know, gold tassels and stuff, and kind of had the Elvis thing going on. And he had the most amazing voice, but he was a spectacular songwriter. He got kind of caught up in the John Mellencamp meets Foreigner scene, and he had to face recovery himself. He's got 21 years. Forgive me for breaking his anonymity, but I've ran it by him. He doesn't mind. This is my story. This is mine, you know. But, again, I'm a folk world classical composer. I play multi-instruments. I do go under the name Maestro because Maestro is another word for master of the acoustic guitar, theatrics, animation, and my craft. I'm a master of my craft, just like you can say Stevie Ray Vaughan is a master of his craft. Now, Kenny Wayne Shepherd can come out and play the blues, but Stevie Ray Vaughan was the master of his craft. There's people who are masters of their craft. And what I'm telling you is that music is still growing. I'm living proof that it is still growing. Now, trying to find a way to work with the music industry is another story, and evolving with technology and marketing and la, 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 and short attention spans with, you know, iPods and downloads and so forth. You know, meaning, But meaning is a whole nother story. Anyways, I'll continue on. Like I said, I lyrically write about my trials and tributes, and I'll go ahead and share you my delusions and hallucinations, if you don't mind, which I believe is real. There's no difference. I just have to check up on it. The only reason why I call it delusion and hallucination is because it's not something that you can go into a bank and talk to someone about. I don't know. Anyways, I write about World War III. And I believe World War III is the battle of man inside. Now, let me separate my opinion from projection. This is how I see things. For me, I believe World War III is inside of me. You know, I believe it's me trying to find a natural consciousness that's already working with animals, trees, grass, the sun, the moon, the stars. It's a balance that keeps the black hole where it is, the sun where it is, and keeps everything rotating, and just keeps everything just right where it is. The force. May the force be with you. like I said, I do have Asperger's syndrome, which has been difficult to deal with from 8 years old, being misdiagnosed with many different disorders. I am a recovering drug addict. I do suffer from panic attacks, I have this strong relationship with fear, and actually some very bondage relationships with fear that I can relate with sexuality that I experienced 6 years under the gun with methamphetamine that I'll go into here in a minute. Some people may call me delusional and that maybe I hallucinate, but, you know, I know the difference between my feelings and reality and the hard realities of the world. If you'd like to stop me anytime, go right ahead.
No, you're doing fine, man. I like the idea of giving you kind of a chance to lay it all out without me interfering too much. Just because I think that you wouldn't normally get this kind of an opportunity to just have an open microphone to say, hey, this is who I am, and this is how it differs from the projected idea of who I am.
Okay. All right, well, then let me continue on. I'll make this faster. I'll go as fast as I can. Like I said, I was born in music, born into it. 1 year old, holding my ears, crying in clubs while my father was singing rock and roll, Led Zeppelin, AC/DC, you know. And my mother was like, you know, trying to get me, you know. My mother is, she suffers from many disorders, extreme phobia and traumas, and she can't even drive. She's a very deep individual. She claims she hears angels. She's very earthy, and she loves to manipulate her environment. She's got a green thumb, and she loves plants. She's very whimsical. Very chimes, kind of earthy kind of lady, you know. And but my mother and father are not together no more. They separated when I was two. Anyways, born in music. I got two uncles. I got one uncle that is the leader of the largest church in Kentucky. He's the leader of the choir. I have another uncle who is a lounge singer. And my grandmother on my mother's side, she was a lounge singer in Jersey. So music.
Oh, right. My home state.
Yeah, music is strong in my family. It's in my blood. Now, I grew up in a town called Charlestown, Indiana, that I had some trials and tribulations with, and I got caught up in the wrong system, you know, and they were just trying to, you know, do shock therapy on me, you know. It's like, erase the emotions. Let's make this man conform. But with Asperger's syndrome and not being diagnosed properly, you know, I got dealt a hand of cards that made it even harder on me. I'm a living miracle for many different reasons, because I didn't, you know, I didn't go crazy on someone, because I have done, you know, quote me, I've done some psychotic things. I'm not a criminal mind. I just feel deeply. And if you know anything about Asperger's syndrome, or you don't, study up about it. It'll let you know a little bit about what I'm going through, you know. I have no intention of being a criminal at all. I'm not a thief. I'm not a liar. I may, like, be somewhat subconsciously a manipulator, but I work on these things as part of my recovery. I moved to Louisville in 95. I started writing on the Orange album that was released in 97. And that gave me an outlet of all this pain and separation from the parents, You know, I grew up with my grandmother. You're following me, right?
I am absolutely following you, man.
Wrote the Orange album on a four-track. I, like, went into this isolated stage, and I wrote this album on my four-track. Verbatim, the Orange album. I'm not sure if anyone's familiar with this record, but it was the first Days of the New album that was released, that Touch, Feel, and Stand, Shelf in the Room, and Downtown, which all reached number one for a number of weeks. Touch, Feel, and Stand reached 18 weeks on the rock charts. Number one. Downtown was like Shelf was like, I know you don't, some of this stuff doesn't even matter, but hey, at the end of the day, you know, it's an accomplishment.
Oh, yeah. And at that time, I remember at that time, you know, you and, I forget the, brain fart at the moment, the original other guitar player in on the Orange album were both winning all the, you know, best new guitar player awards and all the guitar magazines. And, you know, there was a huge amount of focus on you. And at that time, you also were able, you also ended up going out and actually opening up for your, you know, your heroes of youth, Metallica, at the time. So, I mean, this is just like a huge thing to get pulled into.
Orange was released in 97. We did some videos. We did two videos, Touch, Feel, and Stand and Shelf in the Room. Touch, Feel, and Stand reached number one video on, played on MTV. In 98, we did tour with Metallica. We sold around 2 million albums from the first record. We did really well in Canada, really well in the States. And then in 98, see, this is what happened. I was in, of course, as I'm sure you could already get a little taste of my character, you know, I'm very, very visual. I'm like a director. I have a clear vision of what's going on. And art and the tree symbol of Days of the New and the colored albums, all that stuff means so much to me. I mean, I'm like Iron Maiden on crack. The only difference is that I'm spiritually growing, and I'm going to surprise you my next record. And I'm going to surprise you again. And if I can... And another goal of mine is to keep songwriting and melody strong, you know, and consider evolving with the times. But when you're dealing with ethnic, classical, and world and theatrics, it's timeless. And folk music, you know.
Absolutely.
So one of the things of the Orange album, it blew up fast, all right? We're talking acoustic band. Folk songwriter wrote the whole fucking record. Oh, sorry. Excuse me. I said fluff.
That's all right, man. You're on the internet. There ain't no FCC here. Welcome to freedom.
All right. Well, I wrote the whole record on a four-track. All I tried to do was translate that over into just a wider sound. Now, at first, I wasn't going to have a guitar player. It was just going to be me, a bass player, and a drummer. And even before that, I could barely get the bass player and drummer to get involved because it was acoustic. Now, I will admit that they did like songs like Freak, if you're familiar with that song, because it had a heavy edge to it. But we were currently in a metal band, and I did some acid and experienced some humility and experienced, like, just some revelations with God, including having this vision with the tree itself. That I've been writing blogs about on my MySpace. It was pulling teeth trying to get people to even, like, play with me. So I decided that I want this left and right sound, right? Okay?
Yeah.
So I write all the guitar parts, you know, I orchestrate, you know, the bass part, which the bass parts were the same as the guitar parts. There wasn't much difference. Which I will say, Jesse Vest added a few different flavors. And Matt Tall, really his claim to fame, even over the band Tantric, the best thing that Matt Tall ever did was the drum track to Touch, Pill, and Stand. Now, he owns that, and I will let that go. The drum track to Touch, Pill, and Stand, that all he's doing is following my, because I'm playing an acoustic guitar. And when you're playing that rhythmic acoustic guitar, you know. So he just kind of innocently, purely kind of followed me in a strange way, you know.
Well, yeah, you were leading him, you know, in that situation, the guitar becomes another percussive element. It's another percussion instrument.
Yes. So what I'm expressing to you is that this is an acoustic band that I came from metal, and what I have found out is that my anger was going to kill me because it was real. I'm not the kind of metal band or metal act that can go out and be successful. I will be the guy. This is off the record. Please don't quote me in a legal matter. But I could have the capacity to do something really, really, really silly if I was to promote that kind of anger, you know, and try to pretend like I'm Slipknot or try to pretend like I'm, you know, any of these metal bands out there. My anger is if we're going to be angry and we're going to play metal, let's go ahead and break shit. Let's go ahead and tear it all up. Let's get on stage and let's start beating each other's ass. Let's start a fucking war. Because metal is only armor. I'm a metalhead. I love Slayer. I love Slayer's brand new albums that they did with Ruben. They sound fantastic. And Tom Araya is one of my favorite lyricists, because he just lays it out there. He talks about his pain and misery. He talks about how he lives in such an illusion and such a world of concrete, you know. I don't know. He's just an amazing lyricist. He talks about religion of torture, and I'm just quoting him. But I do have metal in me, and I plan on releasing some metal in the future. But, you know, it's fun. It's fun. It's fun to go blah, la, la, la. But I will tell you this. You know, I have a very intense voice, and I have many different voices. And with Asperger's, one of the cue points of Asperger's is role-playing. I mean, I can watch Jim Carrey, or I can watch any kind of character, and if I'm in my confidence and I'm in pure consciousness, I will pick up on your character, and I will, like, for lack of a better word, steal your charisma. I mean, I am a director. I know what's pure, and I know when people are honest, and I know what's bullshit, you know, and it's inside of me, and it's torture, you know. But these things, these negative things I say to you are assets as well. They're not just defects. They're assets. So let me continue.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. And I just want to let you know, Bob's popped in. This is the last show of the live broadcast schedule. So if we decide we want to go over so we can go and get through more music and whatnot, we have free reign to go over time. So
I'll make it quick.
We got 90, all the time we need.
98, me and the band parted, and that became a big deal because the image of the band became more important than the actual vision of the tree, the color, the music, the acoustic sound, and people really got attached to thinking that that band was a band. And we were not a band. There was aspects of it that, you know, I trained those guys so deeply. Now, they can admit it to you today. They're humble today. One of them's in prison. One of them quit the music industry. And the other guy's trying to do a solo project, you know. Because they got screwed with the Tantric thing. Their singer is trying to, he thinks he's me. This Hugo Fiera guy, he wants to be me so bad. And, you know, I don't know. Anyways, he joined up with members of Filter and Fuel. I can't tell you their names, but he's trying to start, like, you know, your average kind of, you know, modern rock and roll, you know, Buck Cherry meets Nickelback thing, and that's cool, man. And hey, man, if you like that, that's cool. But so we parted ways. There was no firing. Travis Meeks did not fire his band. We just knew that, you know, these guys were more focused. One, they didn't, I will admit this, they didn't get paid a lot for their first record. I got paid everything. That is the truth. Because I wrote everything. I did all the work. I'm the one who had the sleeping bag and slept next to the console. They're the ones who went home to their wives and got pussy. Okay?
Right.
All right, there's a big difference. Rock and roll stars, artists, that, you know. But I will tell you this, there's an unhealthiness to that too, and I have to learn how to have my own space. I'm still single, you know. I've been in some unhealthy relationships and tried to date the wrong people. But anyways, we parted ways. Then I went on to buying a studio that was over 25,000 square feet that I, like, isolated in for years. And I worked on Green that was released in 99. I put together a seven-piece band, and I was on my way to putting together my idea of, you know, I hate to say it, and, you know, I mean, God love him, you know, and you can, you know, bust my balls all you want. But I was trying to put together my version of Dead Can Dance or something, you know.
Hey, no problems with that there, man. I love Dead Can Dance, but
well,
I'm not trying
to put together my version of Dead Can Dance anymore, because I found some other things. I got my own thing, and I'm 28 years old, and I found that thing. That's what I started this off with, is I have my craft, and I'm a maestro of my craft. I hired a female vocalist. Her name was Nicole Scherzinger. Nicole Scherzinger is currently the lead singer of Pussycat Dolls. She later, we did 1 month tour, and then after that, you know, I had a really hard time trying to make that transition because of the pressure of the music industry, the expectations of the music industry, the media, the people, the peers in my hometown, the record company. I mean, all of the above. I mean, I had people tell me who I was. And you know, it's just like Jesus Christ. You know, I'm not saying I'm Jesus Christ, but listen, everybody was trying to tell Jesus Christ who he was. You know what he told them? He said, no, motherfucker, I am. I already am. It don't matter what you say. I am. And I believe that consciousness is coming back because we're getting worn out. I mean, or we wouldn't have a black man and a white woman running up for president, balls to the wall. Now, it's really something to talk about, and it's very exciting. That doesn't mean that either one of those guys are going to get it. But we're looking for change, and that's the bottom line. And after all the damage done after, you know, with Bush and him needing to gain control of the oil, which I don't blame the guy and his world, you know, but that's not something I would do, because my intentions and my demeanor for this planet is totally in a totally different vein. So I had a seven-piece band on the Green album. Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you, but the studio that you did that in, do I remember right? That was actually a converted old distillery?
Old Granddad Whiskey was distilled there for years. It was built in the 1800s.
What a cool place to build a studio.
Oh, yeah, and what a cool place to, like, lock yourself up and do crystal methamphetamine for 6 years, too. So, anyways, so I want to remind you, 96, 97, 98, and 99, I was clean. I take that back. I wasn't clean. I drank to get on stage. I didn't drink a lot, but, you know, touring the way I did and dealing with some of the stress, I did medicate just as regularly as anybody else. The only difference was there was bullshit going on in my head. And being as creative as I am and having all these little defects of character and la 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 la, they needed attended to. And that, and the force of nature was saying, look, if you don't tend to these things, you're going to end up somewhere that you don't like. One, jail. Two, a mental institution, which I've been to before. I've been to jail twice. And three, death. And let me tell you about death. I thought and have thought I was dying over 200 times. Thinking you're dying is much more worse than dying, because when you die, you die. But thinking you're dying, you don't know when it's going to happen again. So I can't tell you how many times I've died. I keep
dying in a panic disorder. That would feed anxiety in a profound way, I would think.
Well, I get this claustrophobia with crowds. I mean, I start seeing demons. Not literal demons, but these people who just, like, hate me. And I start thinking the whole world hates me. And I'm talking insecure. As beautiful as I may be, which, you know, whether you think I am or not, you know, but in the humble way of saying I'm beautiful as I may be, is as sick as I am. And I have to work extra hard. The harder I work on that sickness, the more beautiful I become. And the artist that I've become today, I believe I offer more today artistically, musically, spiritually, and just charismatically and in the entertainment industry as I ever have, because I've mastered my craft. I've made the acoustic guitar gorgeous. I've made all other instruments gorgeous. I'll go into that here in a late. Let me, 2000, the year 2000, I worked with The Doors and did some recordings with them, L.A. Woman and The End. They called me to do some tracks. They wanted me to do Peace Frogs. I said, hell no. I mean, I'm inspired by The End. I mean, that's where I'm going. I want to be in that trip, you know. And they were like, you're an idiot. No one's doing The End. Jim's dead. That's like, you know, an epic. You don't understand. It's the national anthem, you know. But, you know, I just stuck with it. And somehow I ended up in the studio with them. And I played a couple licks that changed the intro of the song. And Krieger just, like, he took to me. And we just, like, melted into this magical experience of recording the song. And then
I know from seeing the video performance, when you were being introduced, you know, you could tell how risky the concept of anyone else doing The End was when you were introduced, and you know, said, this is one brave young man. This is not an easy song. And I was speaking before in the show previous about that performance. I played the audio from that performance on my show months ago, and there's that moment, and I still remember watching this. There's this moment when you first start playing on the video. There you can see that you're conscious of your surroundings at the beginning, and then there's this moment where you close your eyes and you lose yourself. You can see that you lose yourself in the song, and it's at that point that it to almost anyone I've ever shown the clip to, just say, my God, this man has just channeled Jim Morrison.
Well, and I speak a different language. It's color, it's vibe, it's energy, it's the room. It's not, you know, how I sound. It's not, you know, if I'm on pitch or not. I already kicked my ass enough. You know, I got my own whip. Okay. You know, I have scars on my back from how many times I've punished myself for feeling a certain way. Now, that's metaphor, but in the same sense, it's not. You know, I have kicked my ass like a mentor of Kung Fu, you know, of learning my craft. And I've dedicated my life to it, and I've sacrificed a lot. And what has been granted to me is that I was out on my own at 13 years old, and that's why I was signed at 16, because my heart was engaged into the world of music and the industry. Little did I know I was going to grow to be the person I am today, which is miraculous, and I'll go into that deeper. So VH1, The Doors, the lineup, you know, Scott Stapp, Scott Stadel, the singer from Train, Perry Farrell, Ian Asbury from The Cult, who else was on that? I mean, I can't remember all the people who was on that. But everyone did a fabulous job. We did photos together. I actually have some photos with all those guys. and it was a great experience, that I felt disconnected with all those people. And I have met, I can't tell you how many celebrities I have met, and I can count on three fingers people who are spiritually in touch, who have the desire and want and hunger and awareness to seek something deeper than immediate gratification, something that invests into the future, something that invests into your soul, something that means something. Meaning alone is a thought, you know, it is an actual thought, you know, and allowing yourself to loathe too much makes you a victim of the way you feel. And then when you feel a victim of the way you feel, that's what they call the disease of addiction. The disease of addiction in textbook is based around being a victim of the way you feel. It is an illusion. But I'm born with it, and there isn't a day goes by that I think I'm a victim of the way I feel, but I have to remind myself that I'm more than that. I'm more than my emotions. I'm more than my thoughts. There's something else going on beyond me that, you know, I'm not just the director here, you know. I'm not Steven Spielberg. God is. You understand?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, and excuse me for the controversial word. What I mean by God is, I mean, the force of nature has its way of placing things. It has its way of making things work. I have my chemistry, and I have my gifts, and then the world, and then people, and then love, and then compassion, and then unity, and all these things. And they're all kind of, excuse me, and don't take me the wrong way, they're all kind of queer words. They're all kind of words that might make you feel uncomfortable. And this is coming from a metalhead. I fucking hate anything that's like nice and cool and da-da-da-da-da. Give me a fucking break. Bah, humbug, Scrooge. Come on, let's get to it. You know? But I work on that every day. I do. I also have another part of me that, you know, really, you know, I'm a very, like I said, animated character. And when I allow myself to be that animated, theatrical, expressive with my hands, using different voices, you know, doing musicals, like, you know, the other night I just did a set and I was just going, hello everyone, how are you? Here I am today. It's such a nice day. You get what I'm saying? Making it's like white man's spoken word. You know?
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
I just think that, you know, you're turning the dialogue aspect, you know, of the show into something that's slightly more operatic and musical.
And improvisation. That. Pure.
Yeah.
You write on the
absolutely.
Spot. You don't know what you're going to play. I might hit a bad note, but my brain goes, guess what? I can follow that bad note up and make it sound good.
Hey, man, that's being a master of your craft. I was wondering what you thought about actually, you know, we've been talking here for like a good 45 minutes. I was wondering if we might actually get to some music, because I know that the folks that have dropped in the chat room are looking for some music, and you and I put together a little bit of a list of things, and I was wondering if you wanted to start with something early on in the piece and maybe work our way through a little bit as we continue to talk, or do you, where would you like to start from as far as when it comes to music? We got a few things. We've got Whimsical from the first album ready to go, Weapon in the Wounds, the orchestration from Never Drowned,
Whimsical.
And we also have.
Let's play Whimsical.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Bob. Let me know when you have Whimsical ready to go in the production chat. And this is from the debut record. Is there any kind of setup that you want to give to this track?
Only that this track was going to be the name and title of the Orange album, because the vibe and energy and the way I felt about the song while I was writing it had a lot to do with the whole entire record. And I do speak about, I can see the orange sky in front of me, you know, and that's one of the main things that really inspired, you know, naming the albums in parentheses and silent. All my albums are silently named by colors. You see them with your eyes and you go, that's red. You get what I'm saying? It's not
Absolutely.
One, two, or three. It's confusing. I'm fucking with people, you know. But you know.
But that's good. That's good. You know, you need to take people out of their comfort zones, and I think that's important in any kind of art. So I totally understand the vibe there. So I guess we should get straight to it. Hey Bob, from the Orange album, Whimsical. Roll it.
Only
Be losing, Bob. You still there, Travis? Ah, I guess Bob's going to have to try and reconnect that call there. So while Bob gets Travis back on the line, I'll just fill a little bit of time here. I don't know if I should save this for when we get him back, but anyway, Bob was saying, he goes, I don't know, I think my definition of metal is something different because this doesn't strike me as metal. And Bob was saying, I call it acid folk, which I think is a pretty good terminology for it. We're gonna do some more music here as we move along. And getting a busy signal. Well, we'll work on that. So I tell you what, while we work on that, we're gonna go to another. Why don't we go to another track here? I reckon, Bob. Let's go to one of my personal favorites, off of Green, Weapon in the Wound. I love this track, and I love the groove, the bizarre tuning, all of it. So go ahead and roll that one, Bob. Weapon and the Wound.
What a spell.